Lots going on in the world of the haunted. Oh boy, I can't believe Halloween is right around the corner now. Next Monday. Up next, yep, the Haunted Housewives. Join us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. The Haunted Housewives are with us. Teresa Argee, Kathy Weber back, often considered the world's most unusual paranormal investigators. Wives, mothers, authors, ghost hunters. They balance their family lives with their paranormal pursuits. Kathy owns and operates the Willoughby Ghost Walk, author of The Haunted Willoughby, Ohio. Teresa is a highly respected speaker, media personality, author of the award-winning America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places, and they're back with us on Coast to Coast. What a spooky time of year, Haunted Housewives. How are you both?
We are good. We are enjoying this holiday season for sure.
Well, me too. I mean, there's nothing like it. October is just a special month, isn't it?
It's absolutely our favorite time of the year. It's our Christmas, as we like to say.
We're
very busy, and we love every second of it.
All right, Kathy, how did you and Teresa hook up to become the Haunted Housewives?
Well, it's kind of an unusual story. I was mainly focusing on history and how it relates to ghosts. And that's when I created the Willoughby Ghost Walk to take people around and talk about history and ghosts and scary stories. Well, Teresa was more involved in paranormal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And one night she decided she was going to come and meet me on the Willoughby Ghost Walk and followed me around most of the night asking annoying questions. And partway through the night she said, you know, we really got to get together and I'm going to take you on a paranormal investigation. And I'm like, nuh-uh, lady. So she continued to pursue. So it's kind of one of those love stories where she kind of wore me down and took me on my first paranormal investigation, which was kind of baptism by fire. And ever since then, we've been inseparable.
Teresa, you wouldn't give up, would you?
No, I wouldn't. I was really interested in getting involved in more the community aspect of the paranormal, which Kathy was involved in with she was doing fundraisers, and she was involved with another paranormal group that I was working with. And I liked the whole aspect of her dealing with the historic part of it and not focusing in on evidence, which most of these ghost hunters or paranormal teams seem to be more focused on capturing evidence than telling a story. And to me, the story was the most important part because you can't, you know, you can show somebody a picture or play them an EVP, and if they weren't there, they're not going to believe it. But the history doesn't change. So I basically stalked Kathy until, you know, restraining orders only work so long. So eventually she had to deal with me. So,
all right, so the first October of every year now is called National Ghost Hunting Day. Do you two get involved in that? You first, Kath.
Well, we were involved. This year was the first one. And National Ghost Hunting Day turned out to be more than I think they had anticipated. It became a very global event with teams all over the world participating in a one-time, one-day ghost hunt, which lasted a period of 2 hours that was monitored. And they were trying to create more of a collective consciousness effort to get everybody focusing on the same thing at the same time. And we do, you know, all these teams, we do our paranormal investigations, but we do them in our own way. This was to try to get everybody concentrated in one direction using the same set of questions, the same type of evidence collection, the same type of transcommunication, the same thing at one time. So it was a pretty interesting experiment. We were proud to participate. We were happy with the location that we had. You know, they were great. So
how did it start? Who started National Ghost Hunting Day? How did that happen?
You know, I think, well, there was a woman, her name is Geister Rose, and I think she was one of the people behind it. But there were a lot of people who came in when it really became an event. I think it was talked about in circles, and next thing you knew, several people were participating. Probably the best-known figurehead that ended up coming forward was Brian Cano, and he was from The Haunted Collector, which was a show with John Zaffis on it.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, so Brian kind of came to the helm and took charge, he was kind of the one who was tutoring us as we were preparing for the day. And he had some very good ideas that we did implement.
You did some experiments too, didn't you?
Yes, we did. As I said, they try to focus everybody to use the same questions at the same time to see if we can elicit a response that was different than when we're all ghost hunting doing our thing. And that in itself was very interesting for us, and it did provide some answers that we, I think in a lot of ways, Teresa and I weren't expecting, because it was somewhat chaotic as everybody was collecting time to get to do all this at one time. There was like a shotgun start trying to get everybody to start at the exact same time. There was a lot of media and different things being used, live video feeds. So it was kind of confusing, but at the same time, everybody tried to do a beginning invocation, which we had never done anything like that, where everybody recited the same words at once. And I got to admit, I was kind of overwhelmed and excited to know that so many people at one time were saying the same thing to try to invite the spirits to communicate.
And did that happen?
Well, right off the bat, we did have responses to our questions. It was interesting because we had invited others in with us. It was not just Teresa and I. So there were people who were observing as well as another team of investigators. Three of them were with us. So as we participated, I think everybody was surprised that even though it was almost like, it felt like a show at times with so many people present, it did happen in front of everybody all at one time.
Tell me you didn't use a Ouija board to make this happen.
You know, Brian Cano had a lot of strict rules about what we were to use and not to use. The first hour, he wanted us to use only like digital voice recorders and nothing else. And the second hour, he had rules as far as not using Ouija boards or using pendulums or dowsing rods. He wanted us to communicate with using spirit boxes and ovulus, different items like that, that are more of electronic devices that we try to use to get responses.
Teresa, how do your families react to what you two do?
The family influence, first of all, Kathy and I put family first absolutely all the time. You know, as mothers, and Kathy's a grandmother, we have to do that. That's what makes it a little bit more challenging to balance things. A lot of the ghost hunters we work with are retired. They might be, or they're single, or they're younger. So that's it's tough to balance that. My family, they think I'm a little bit nutty. I'll admit that. Of my three children, I have one that is really into what I do, that thinks it's cool and interesting. My other two children, they're used to it, so they just kind of roll their eyes. My husband tries very hard to be supportive, but I think he thinks I'm a little bit nutty, and I should be careful because I'm sure he's listening right now. But they're supportive, but it's very hard. My husband's a police officer, so he's a little bit more skeptical than the normal husband. But they've been supportive, especially as the success that Kathy and I have found as Haunted Housewives and what we've done through the community and with our various books. I think that they've really rallied to the helm and been supportive, even if it's not something that they're 100% into, let's say. We don't share the same strange fascinations. But
Teresa, is there anything about the paranormal that you would find uncomfortable or unnerving?
Oh, for sure. Kathy and I get asked this a lot, too, about what we do. I mean, you see what's on TV, and it looks fun and interesting and exciting.
Right.
But there's definitely a dark side to this, and there's definitely a real danger in what we do. And Kathy and I have come up against things that we would consider dark energy or dark spirits. I don't like to use the word demon, but there's definitely something negative and nasty that can occur when you're doing this kind of paranormal investigating, even if it is a fundraiser, even if it is just going to a public place. And we have encountered things like that. And we've felt the negative aspects of a haunting. Kathy has been followed home by a spirit. She had an attachment with her for years. This spirit that we believe we picked up at the Ohio State Reformatory that was with us every time we were at an investigation, even if we were in another state, this spirit, the same voice, the same ghost that would identify himself as the same person would show up in our hauntings and was actually in Kathy's home messing with her. I've had an attachment to me many years ago after a residential investigation that wreaked havoc on my life. And this is something that we now take measures to avoid, because there is something that can affect your health, your personality, your sleep, and affect your family life. Definitely have to be careful with that.
And Kathy, in terms of what you've done, anything dangerous for you?
I'd have to agree a lot with Teresa on approaching with a degree of caution. A lot of times, even I got to admit, I'm guilty of just going in and saying, hey, let's have some fun. We're out tonight. Let's see what we can conjure up. But you've got to really draw yourself inward and say, hey, we're communicating with the other side here. Who knows who we're speaking with? When you think you're speaking with someone, a woman, and she presents herself as calm and very friendly, is that really who you're speaking with? So I think a lot of those questions come to our mind when we're doing this, because one of the things we really try to draw out is the communication with the other side. And I'm telling you, there's a lot of times I think they can maybe trick you into you thinking everything's fine. These are the people we always talk to. The same ghost. They have a name because historically here they are. You know, this is Joe who's always at this building. Is that really true? I don't think so. So I again, there is an error. There's a little bit of danger involved. And we have lately, as we've been maturing in our journey, I think we've been questioning more and more how safe and careful we are.
And if you're not safe and careful, what's the downside?
As Teresa said, there have been nights where some of us have felt ill. And you have to address that right away, because people are like, oh, you know, I have a really bad headache. I feel dizzy. And that does happen to people. I know it happens every day. But when you're on an investigation and you're trying to get involved with something that really we don't know much about, even though we claim we know what we're doing, you have to take note of that. And we have removed ourselves from the situation. Teresa and I are both fairly intuitive. When we go into a situation where we both feel there might be something negative or something dark happening, we'll leave immediately, because neither one of us feels we're comfortable dealing with anything that is questionable in that manner. Like, you know, I'm not going to say the D word, the demonic, but those are things that she and I we're not skilled in that area. So we do try to use our intuition to make sure we are doing something that's fairly safe, because as you said, we're family people. We don't want to bring these things home to affect our families, for sure.
Is there a danger of that happening? I think it is.
Well, there's a definite danger, because Teresa and I have both experienced it firsthand. And I must admit, when it first happened to me, I was fairly glib about it, even though Teresa would continually say, I don't think this is good. I don't think you should act like it's not a big deal when it is. And she felt this particular spirit that had seemed to grab a hold of me was very much against her. And I'd have to agree, because there was a lot of name calling, and he seemed to have a very negative attitude towards her, like almost he wanted her to be hurt. And I just was like, oh, I'm brushing it off. It's no big deal. But as time progressed, things did amp up quite a bit, and it was very noticeable that something was affecting your day-to-day life. And I would call her and say, this happened or that happened. And she'd be like, we have to take measures to get rid of this. And finally, something big did happen. And it was like, you know what, at this point, you've got to take this seriously and find out how to get this attachment off of you.
Would you say you two specialize in anything specifically?
Kathy and I specialize in working the paranormal angle through history. We're known in the community for our paranormal fundraisers. So we're dedicated to the historic preservation, and that's what people know us for. We don't do residential very often anymore, but we do specialize in going to places maybe that nobody's ever heard of, maybe that people don't even believe could be haunted. And we go in there and we research the history, and we look for the ghosts, and we try to find a way to keep these places open and bring awareness and monies to them through our paranormal pursuits, and it seems to be working. And it's funny you ask, George, because just coming up in November, we're going to be recognized for this. We were invited by the mayor of a local city here
Oh, great.
In our area to be recognized at a dinner for our efforts in raising money for one of the places in the area, one of these historic places. And we're not the only ones being honored, but this is the first time as ghost hunters we've really been recognized by the community. And that's kind of what keeps us going. That's our thing. We don't specialize in things like these extreme hauntings that there might be something negative going on. We have investigated those, but again, like Kathy said, that's not something we want to mess with on purpose. We don't want to get in over our head because we do have our children at home. So we like to be recognized for our historic pursuits in the paranormal. Mm-hmm.
What is it about these preserved areas that were so haunted, are still haunted? I mean, why these historic places?
We believe that a lot of these places that we go to, and some of them are very sad places, these poor houses, these asylums, these old hospitals. When you think about the personal stories of the people that were there, some of these stories are tragic, especially for a place like a poorhouse. There's a place in our community we're involved with called the Lake County History Center. And this was a poorhouse. And when you think about what a poorhouse was, it was a dumping ground for people that society wanted to forget about. And we believe that a place like that, or a hospital, or any place that has this sad backstory, these people, they spent their whole tragic lives being forgotten and being neglected. And then we come in and we're like, hey, we're here to tell your story. We want to remember you. We want to tell the personal story of you. To us, they're not just somebody who needs to be forgotten. They're a real person with feelings and who loved and had family lives and who might have lost. And it's those personal stories that compel us. And we think that those are the important stories that need to be told. It's part of our community's history. It's part of our nation's history. And this isn't just a fact written in a storybook. These were real people. And we want to highlight that and bring that to life. And we think that we can find the beauty in a dark, sad, scary place like an old insane asylum or poorhouse and find a beautiful story in there.
The Mansfield Prison out in your neck of the woods, that's pretty haunted too, isn't it?
Oh, the Mansfield Reformatory. This is the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, where they filmed The Shawshank Redemption. So a lot of people may recognize the building as that. I believe is the most haunted place in the United States.
Wow.
One of the most haunted places for sure. I mean, that's our opinion, of course, but the over almost 100 years of history, lots of tragedy, as a prison would have. Been featured on every one of the ghost shows and countless books, featured in my book. Kathy and I have been there 100 times, and we have found some of the most incredible stories that come out of that building. Some very sad spirits, some dark spirits, a lot of ghost stories, and it's not just us. Hundreds and hundreds of people have had experiences there. It was a place for juvenile offenders when it first opened, but over a couple of decades, it became just a dumping ground for the worst of society's criminals, hardened criminals. It was a horrible, horrible place to spend time in.
And it sounds like those spirits stayed.
Absolutely. And that's where Kathy picked up this spirit that she was talking about, this attachment, which we believe was a prisoner there. In fact, we got evidence, or at least we believe we found evidence, that backed up that this spirit, this ghost that we were talking to, was a real prisoner there.
Let's come back and talk about more of that and some true crime and haunting stories next. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Teresa RG, of course, and Kathy Weber, the Haunted Housewives, they're with us. Let's talk about some true crime and haunting situations as well, Teresa and Kathy. What are some of the most famous true crime events that led to extreme hauntings?
This is Teresa. Some of the most incredible murder mysteries in our nation turned into stories of incredible hauntings. I think one of the earliest ones that I remember is the Greenbrier ghost. And this one actually went in the record books when a man named Shu, he was married to Zona Hester Shu, and I think his name was Edward, but they called him Trout. His wife mysteriously died, and he seemed very, very distraught, and this was like in 1896. Young woman just fell incredibly ill all of a sudden and died, and he was very distraught, or he seemed very distraught at the time. And this poor young woman was buried, but her mother said that the ghost of her daughter kept appearing to her at night, saying that she had been murdered. And she, the mother, somehow had convinced authorities to dig up her body. And when they did, they did find evidence that she had been strangled and murdered by her husband.
Oh, geez.
And this was documented into court, and the mother, she swore that it was the spirit, the ghost of her daughter, that actually told her about what happened, because there was no way she would have known. And this was the first case of which a ghost, testimony from a ghost, helped convict a murder. And of course, she's known now as the Greenbrier ghost, and mm-hmm. he is supposed to haunt this area in West Virginia where she lived, especially near her grave and the old home that she used to live with her husband, who was convicted of a murder.
I guess there's an old saying, don't cross a ghost. Huh?
That's right. You know, I mean, think about that, the bond of a mother and a child that could extend after death.
Oh my
God.
She
would come back, and this mother insisted that they investigate this. And there's been lots of books and stories written about the Greenbrier ghost. I think there's actually a television special coming
mm-hmm.
out with our friends paranormal investigators that are investigating this area of the Greenbrier ghost. That is that's one of the older cases. My personal favorite, well, I do like the whole Villisca axe murder. That's covered in my book, where the Moore family was murdered by an axe murderer who came in and killed this entire family,
oh,
four children.
True story, guests, right?
And the two adults that were murdered in Villisca, Iowa. And that is a very haunted, well-known haunted story as well. Very sad. They never did convict the murderer on that. There were people that were brought to justice, but they were both acquitted. And so the mystery of that one remains unsolved, and I believe that that is why the Villisca Axe Murder House is extremely haunted.
Is there negative energy tied to some of this?
Oh, I believe there's definite negative energy, especially in a place like Villisca, where these were children, innocent victims. There was no motive for this murder. There has to be some negative energy. When you think about the kind of person who would do this, who would murder with an axe six children and two adults, they had to be without conscious, without soul. They had to be a monster in my eyes.
Oh, sure.
And that negative energy remains. And it's hard to believe that a person could do that, but they do. And for something like that to go unsolved, can you imagine the victims of that crime that are just crying out for justice? I believe there's a definite negative stain left in a place like that would happen, where these poor children who just want their murder to be brought to justice.
How can you really clean up an area that's haunted like that with that kind of heinous crime?
You know, I'm not sure that you can completely
I don't
clean
think
up
so
that
either.
Area. I think that the best you can do is try to remember these people that died, remember the victims, and not take it lightly. Like when ghost hunters go into a place like Villisca, they have to be respectful that even though it's a great story and it's something that's really incredibly interesting and creepy, that we're talking about the lives of an entire family and these young children. So I think first step is you have to be respectful, and you have to look at it from their personal side. You can do things like people do blessings or cleansings, or Kathy and I are not big on the whole idea that you can send a spirit to the light. We don't believe that there's any human that really has that ability. That is something
right.
that only...
Wasn't that Poltergeist where the little lady was saying, go into the light, and then she changed her mind, huh?
Right. I think that somebody who says they have that kind of power is reaching. I do believe that you might be able to communicate with these spirits and maybe urge them on, like, you know, you don't need to stay here, you can move on. But then again, we also believe that, especially in a case where there's children involved, we don't believe that a child's soul can be stuck on this earthly plane. The God that I believe in would not do that to a child. That's my personal belief. But we do believe that maybe part of their energy can remain stuck, that there is part of their consciousness that maybe is confused, or somehow that energy is not trapped there, but still lingering there. Maybe your consciousness splits into many pieces, or it's just a part of who you are, not your entire soul. So I think the best you can do is pray and remember them with love and affection and respect, and I think that would help. But a lot of these places where these tragedies happen, I mean, I think that is going to be there for a long, long time, if not forever.
And Kathy, what about some of the urban legends that you and Teresa look at?
Well, it's funny because urban legends in a lot of way are very popular. And we even know some ghost hunting teams who take them so seriously to the point where they will go and investigate to see if these cryptids or creatures or monsters that are featured in some of the urban legends are real. And I know people who will swear to you that things like what we have in our area, the Melon Heads, which is a fantastic, crazy legend, are still roaming this planet right now today in 2016. And, you know, some of us take it with a grain of salt. As I said, other people are dead serious that they have experienced something like a Melon Head, which is a very odd legend.
Yeah, tell me about that. What is that story?
Well, the Melon Heads in our area, Teresa and I were surprised when we did some research because I assumed the Melon Heads was definitely a local lore. And we came to find out that there are Melon Head stories in Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Michigan, all the way out to parts west in the south. So the Melon Heads in our area, there was a doctor who was doing experiments on children with hydrocephaly during a time frame in our, you know, in our culture when there was no cure for water on the brain. So these deformed children were orphaned, which was also a popular cultural thing. You left your deformed children behind because you didn't want to raise them. And this doctor gathered them to himself and took them out into the woods where he built this cabin with a laboratory, and he performed these experiments on the children. And as time went on, the children did end up burning down the home, killing the doctor and his wife, and escaping into the nearby woods, where here it is from 1930 till 2016. They're still roaming out there, and we don't know whether they're ghosts or they're interdimensional alien beings or they procreated, but somehow these Melon Heads are running around chasing people through the woods of our local area.
And people are convinced of that.
Absolutely. People will swear to it. I was shocked when I got on the internet a few weeks ago and saw there were recent stories of reports of seeing the Melon Heads.
Wow.
You know, and I always assumed it was a local lore and a rite of passage when you're in high school to run around the woods like a crazy person screaming your head off because something's chasing you. But no, these people swear they have actually seen these Melon Heads, you know, the creatures with the misshapen heads, right on the way to Walmart. Right on the side of the road. So
maybe they work there.
Thing. Yeah, I don't know, but they swear these are real beings.
Have you had ghostly apparitions approach you in dreams?
I have had ghostly apparitions approach me in my house when I've been wide awake. In dreams, I have been very privileged to have my relatives visit me, which has always been a very exciting experience for myself because it's a very real thing to talk to your grandfather who's been passed for 40 years and know that, you know, and when I wake up, I know it was a real experience of some sort. I mean, it was a tangible, I was talking to my grandpa. So, but as far as apparitions, I have seen them in my house, which is always a little unsettling because I don't like bringing my work home with me.
No, that is true. How about you, Teresa? Dreams?
I believe very strongly that our loved ones communicate with us by visiting us in dreams. In fact, I think, and this is Kathy and I tell people when we do our lectures and presentations, this, we believe, is probably the most common way for our loved ones to visit us because think about it. If you're sleeping at night and you're woken up to grandma who died 20 years ago at the end of your bed, I mean, that could be completely terrifying, especially for a young child. But when we dream about our loved ones, it's just them letting us know, hey, I'm thinking about you, you know, I'm proud of you, or I'm there for you, I'm watching over you. So, I mean, I'm sure sometimes it's just a dream, but other times I believe this is a way that they can communicate with us without being scary and terrifying. And we also believe our loved ones can come and go as they please. They're not trapped here. They're not stuck. They if they've crossed over, as people say, that doesn't matter. They can come and go and visit us. So I think that dreams, you should really pay attention to your dream. And I think that you'd be able to figure out when it's just a dream, like dad or grandma was on your mind, or when it's they're actually there. They have a message for you. They want you to know that they are hearing you, seeing you, and involved in your life. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Teresa, what's the longest story you've heard of a ghost haunting? I mean, 100 years, 200 years? How long do they hang around?
I think that a spirit will hang around as long as there's somebody there to remember them, as long as they can say their name. One of my favorite stories, and this is kind of a true crime ghost story, history story, all in one. There is a place in St. Louis Obispo called the Mission San Miguel, and
Heard
it was an old settlement right on the Camino de Real. And it was a stopping point for settlers and travelers that were going up the coast. And there was a family there, the Reed family, William Reed and his children, who in, 1848, I believe, they were all murdered these people that came by. They knew that the Reeds would trade gold for money, and so they thought they were early victims. Anyway, a group of men came in and massacred this whole family, another whole family massacred. That's 1847. And the Reed family, who are buried there on the mission to this day, we believe, still haunt that place. And I was privileged enough to investigate that place when I was out in California. And I do believe, and that's not even that old, 1848, so, you know, not 300 years old, but we've got reports from Ireland. I was in a castle in Ireland last year when I was there visiting, that an 11th century castle, that there was a spirit of a monk in this castle. So we're talking 1,000 years, and in, especially over in Europe, I think as long as there's somebody to hear that ghost story or to remember these people, they can haunt for eternity.
Teresa, do you find that ghost stories are prevalent all over the planet? They're not really restricted to just a certain region?
I think that every culture in the world has some sort of a supernatural or spiritual belief system where they can have ghosts or loved ones or deceased relatives that can come back. So I believe ghost stories are a universal thing, and I don't think it matters how long ago or what the belief system is or what your religious beliefs are, that a ghost can be forever and for everyone. And I don't think that it really matters where or who. I think that this is just part of our as a human being, this is part of who we are. It's part of our entire dogma to have ghosts and spirits, even though not everybody believes in that.
Right. Right.
You know, they might not even believe in a ghost, but they do believe in, most people, not all people, of course, believe in some sort of an afterlife, and if they're atheists, maybe not. But I think that this is a universal belief.
Kathy, have you been able to distinguish the difference now between a ghost and something demonic? They're two different things, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And I do believe one thing, the demonic is not as commonplace as we make it. I think through the efforts of Hollywood and even through the efforts of some of our ghost hunting friends on TV, they make demons seem like it's like, you know, a common thing. I feel demonic, a true demonic possession of some sort, is a very not common thing. And we've seen some of them outlined through history. Some of them have been big cases of exorcisms where people have been harmed in the process or even died. But Teresa and I can't say that we're able to distinguish, but as I said, we are fairly sensitive to what we're dealing with, so we approach it from as many different angles as we can so that we can see it for what it is. And if she and I do at any moment, you know, feel like something negative in any way, demonic or in any way, we will remove ourselves from any situation involving a negative. And I realize some of the ghost hunting people, they seem to want to, they're very cavalier.
They thrive on it.
Yeah, they drive that energy. They try to pull it towards them. And they purposely challenge. And I find it very disrespectful to whatever it is you're dealing with spiritually. And I think that they're barking up the wrong tree, because I know many, even some of my friends who have that attitude, like, hey, it's no big deal, let's call the demons. They have had some big problems in their life and some major changes that they've had to make, because I've seen whole teams break up because I think they got involved in too much darkness and too much negativity, thinking it's all the same thing. I don't believe it's all the same thing. Me talking to, you know, my great, you know, your great grandmother, and me talking to a demon is two different things.
I think so too. Have you been to an exorcism at all?
I have not, and I don't know, because of my own religious beliefs, I don't know that I would want to attend an exorcism. I realize they're trying to release a negative energy, but in my opinion, they seem to know where that energy is going, but I'm not really sure. So I don't know that I would put myself in a situation of releasing an extremely dangerous negative energy and being a part of it.
Have you had any doubts at all about the existence of what could be on the other side?
Every single day. Even just as I was listening to the talk about true crimes and hauntings, I'm always questioning this young bride. You know, it's historically accurate. She trips on her wedding gown, falls down the stairs as she's coming down to be married, and breaks her neck in a tragedy. Why would she haunt that place? Why would she come back and haunt that moment of what happened? And so that's one question I always have. Another question is, how the heck do those voices get on those recorders anyway?
Huh.
And Teresa and I do a lot of spirit communication, and we are very, very much into trying to talk to the other side. But I can't tell you how many years I've been doing this. I still say, how did they talk to us? They don't have a human form. They don't have vocal cords. They don't even have a heart or a working brain. How were they able to speak to us intelligently and answer a question with more than one word in an intelligent manner? I'm just flabbergasted.
Well,
it's a mystery.
Let's talk about Halloween when we come back at the top of the hour. Plus, we're going to take phone calls on ghost questions or even stories right here on Coast to Coast AM with the Haunted Housewives. Their website is exactly that, hauntedhousewives.com. Linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com as well. I just love Halloween, don't you? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that and what that means to the ghosts.